Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to Creativeness and Opportunities, a World Insight special on China's 2024 political season. I'm Tian Wei, in the Great Hall of the People in Beijing. With the conclusion of the National People's Congress on Monday, this year's two sessions have come to a close. This year's two sessions were shorter than in previous years, but it was adequate in covering many important issues, including new quality productive forces. Despite the world changing at rapid pace, China will continue to develop through interactions with the rest of the world. And Chinese Premier Li Qiang laid out the major tasks and targets for the government in the year 2024.
The following part of the program features conversations with MPC Deputy Tian Xuan from Tsinghua University, MPC Deputy Nancy Ip from Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, MPC Deputy Xue Qiquan from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, and CPPCC Standing Committee Member Zhou Hanming.
China has set its growth target to about 5% for the year 2024. Some consider this as quite an ambitious target. Many wonder, with all these goals, grand ones, how is China going to achieve it?
Yeah, I agree with you. Actually, there were a lot of discussions starting from second half of last year about the economic goals, the targets, which is going to be set in these two sessions. Actually, people would have a huge disagreement. Someone were quite pessimistic, saying maybe the goal should be set to 4 to 4.5%. Others were quite optimistic.
Which camp did you belong to?
We had a discussion with the government when they were sort of try to ask our opinions. At that time, I was in the middle, I think around 5%. This is a reasonable goal. I don't think it's very ambitious.
Why would you say that? What is actually supporting the around 5%?
Right. In the last year, the very first year after the COVID-19 pandemic, we had, at that time, we actually, our goal was also around 5%. And turns out it was 5.2%. We had some ups and downs, in terms of the economy, economic growth in the last years. The central government has a lot of policies trying to support the economic growth. In the new year, in 2024, with the combination of fiscal and monetary policies, I think this 5% is achievable goal. Certainly, it's not an easy job.
Right.
Absolutely, it's not an easy job. If you may pay attention, that you may notice that actually, Li Qiang, in the government work report, he said we are going to issue ultra long, special government bonds.
Indeed.
And starting from 2024, we are going to have the 1 trillion yuan, which is sort of going to support some infrastructure and also the special areas for technological innovation.
How is China linked to the rest of the world, including with the business side, with the economic side, but at the same time be able to achieve what China considers as its own confidence and its own approach?
I think that's a very good question. It's a trade-off. We need to find a good balance. As the second largest economy, we certainly cannot develop just by ourselves. We need to participate in global cooperation. We get a lot of benefit from globalization in terms of supply chain or industrial chain, all kinds of these things. We certainly cannot, just like people said, the opening up policy cannot be reversed. But as we become stronger and stronger, we certainly get pushback from other countries. That's the reason why we need to develop ourselves, develop our own technology, our innovation, and strengthen our economic conditions, even though we have a lot of issues in our country.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has stressed that developing new quality productive forces amid the country's accelerated efforts to foster new growth drivers and promote high quality development. With innovation playing a leading role, new quality productive forces mean advanced productivity that stresses high tech, high efficiency, and high quality. Plasmark AD, this test can bring people with accuracy to test Alzheimer's as high as 96%. Wow, do you know you have saved a lot of lives and a lot of families?
Yes.
So tell me more about it, how it works.
So my research team, we developed this blood test that can provide an early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So for the disease, actually, there are changes in the brain pathology many years before the onset of the clinical symptoms. So we work hard to develop this blood test that requires a very small amount of blood, like one drop of blood. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to perform the test and gives a very accurate diagnosis of the condition of the individual. Mm-hmm. For example, whether the individual is healthy mm-hmm. or has low risk or medium risk or high risk of getting the disease mm-hmm. years later, like 5 to 10 years later.
Wow.
So the blood test is highly accurate, 96% for Alzheimer's disease. And very recently, we actually can provide a diagnosis even earlier than Alzheimer's disease. For example, if the individual has mild cognitive impairment, mm-hmm. our blood test can also provide the diagnosis, you know, with an accuracy of about 87%.
You know, what does it say to you when China makes very clearly that new quality productive forces will be the key for future economic development?
Yes.
Would that help you to connect the dots that you've already been thinking for years as an educator? And as a scientist, how can you tap into the advantages that there is such a momentum now?
Yeah, no, I am truly excited about this this new quality productive forces because it is so visionary and it is something that, again, higher education sectors can really contribute. Mm-hmm. Because for this to happen, we have to train talents, we have to have the right ecosystem, and we have to look into the future, right? What kind of technologies can really contribute to that? So this is perfect for university to contribute. Because
right on time.
Yeah, because this is exactly what we are doing, right? So we have to be innovative in our curriculum design. You know, how do we train our students? So for example, we launch Measure Plus X, and X means any emerging technology. It can be AI, it can be anything.
Wow.
So we have launched that, and uh-huh. the students love it because, you know, they have the opportunity to
think
learn.
And
yeah,
to imagine.
Think. Exactly. So now with ChatGPT, we said, well, we don't just expect students to memorize what they learn in class, but they have to learn how to think.
Now, I should say congratulations, Professor Xu, for your achievements and also winning a world-coveted Buckley Prize in condensed physics, condensed matter physics. But can you explain in average Joe's language exactly what it means, what are you working on, and why is it so significant to all of us?
Yeah, I think I can talk about the significant twofold. The first, and you know, the basic research, fundamental research is for the understanding our nature. So what I discovered with the quantum Nomenclature effect is the new law of electron motion in our materials. For example, transistor is a special device to control the electron motion. Similarly, quantum Nomenclature allows the new law of the electron flow or motion in our materials. One of the unique features of this effect is that the electron move around the edge of the materials or the devices with basically no energy consumption in principle. So certainly it's a new law of the electron motion and at the same time, because of this dissipation, this transport of electron, certainly we can imagine in the future we can use this new law of electron motion to develop a low energy consumption electronics.
The government work report have been suggesting about more energy toward science and technology. And then in order to improve the new quality productive forces, how far is your field from supporting to achieve that?
I think the scientists in our field or similar field really form the foundation for the future new quality productive power or the force. Because technology in many ways initially developed from the breakthrough in the fundamental research. Like if you talk about the transistor, and the beginning is a discovery in the physics of a semiconductor, but now it's already used anywhere in the world. So I think both science advancement and technology development are equally important. So I'm very fortunate to be a scientist in the basic research. And I think our effort, of course, is to eventually develop some technology, but we need it takes time to transfer a discovery in the science into a practical technology, then to the industry or economics. So we need all the people in the different aspect of the this chain.
You suggest that the latest rules of data flow here in China should be in accordance with those most popular in the world. Could you explain what you mean and why do you see it is so important?
This year, my focus is on the transformation of data on board, meaning the import and export of data. We need to focus on very specific three issues. The first one concerning the classification and segmentation of data. At least three categories could be mentioned. Core data, important data, and general one. So as general data is concerned, it could be transmitted freely. My focus is on the very important item we call important data, how to well classify the very general and core meanings of importance. And second, even though certain data could be classified as important data, still they could be transmitted with certain permission. Then a kind of leverage we have been very well used in free trade zone we call negative list. The government could work out a negative list mentioning very specifically what kinds of important data cannot be easily transmitted or transmitted at length.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to so-called international standards, there's no international standards yet. Only national governments now these days, some are very proactive in working on rules and also space of the data flow. So what is the international standards? What is the, you know, some of the references that China should really look into and why?
I just showed two examples. The first one was and is CPTPP. In that international convention, there are 30 chapters in total with 6,000 pages of the whole document as the official convention. A major part of it is about data. So far as international trade is concerned, we just classify into three categories: commodity, service, and data. And the second is a very specific convention on data. It's called DEPA, DEPA.
Yes.
China launched a very serious concern and officially applied to be a member of that convention. So these two conventions are just the regional international standards we need to follow. But the first step is, before we officially join these two conventions, we need to have sufficient experiments, mean we need to have a place of test. That's why special economic zones will play a key role for the testing.
Amid mounting global instability and uncertainty, expectations are high on China as the second largest economy in the world and a significant international player to play its role as an anchor of stability and foster global camaraderie and growth. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, who is also the Politburo member of the CPC Central Committee, said that China is ready to work with all countries to build an open, inclusive, clean and beautiful world that endures peace, universal security, and shared prosperity, particularly through cooperation with the Global South.
全球南方不再是沉默的大多数。中国，我们过去、现在、将来，我们都是全球南方的坚定一员。
China, yesterday, today, and tomorrow has always been and will always be a member of the Global South. This is a central message when he touched on China's diplomacy work of the past year and mapping out China's diplomacy for the year 2024.
中国同非洲，中国同东盟。
It is the underlining backdrop when he described China's continuous interaction with ASEAN countries, China's relations with the Arab region, China's continuous interactions with Latin America, and China's relations with African countries. It is also the reason behind China's approach and stance on the ongoing Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
加沙民众。
People in Gaza have the right to life in this world, and women and children deserve the care from their families. All detainees should be released, and all actions that harm civilians should be stopped.
伤害平民的行为都应该被制止。只有还巴勒斯坦人民以公道。
Restoring justice to the Palestinian people and fully implementing the two-state solution is the only way to break the vicious cycle of Palestinian-Israeli conflicts, to eliminate the breeding ground of extremist ideologies, and to realize enduring peace in the Middle East.
Wang Yi made clear that he is following the traditions of all his predecessors and has been making his very first foreign visit outside China for the year 2024 to African countries. He said that's a tradition for 34 years continuously. As for the future, the enlargement of BRICS will once again be an important topic on China's diplomacy. Meanwhile, China will continue to support countries from the Global South to host important events of the year, such as the BRICS Summit, the G20 Summit, the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting, and also some of the other important events. And Wang said it's important that the Global South is not only contributing to 40% of the GDP growth in the world today, but also to have independent thinking and independent ideas.
不能再允许个别或少。
Certain or a few powers should not monopolize international affairs. Countries should not be categorized according to their strength. Those with the bigger fist should not have the final say. And it is definitely unacceptable that certain countries must be at the table while some others can only be on the menu.
He also made clear it is very important for the Global South to play a key role in the global governance on artificial intelligence. In fact, he suggested that China will contribute to the ideas about capacity building of the Global South when it comes to the use and the future of AI.
Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
The following part of the program features conversations with Henry Tong, Ying Yan, and David Chu from CPPCC Standing Committee.
The 2024 Government Work Report doubles down on the central government's support for the Greater Bay Area. I talked to two Standing Committee members of the CPPCC from Hong Kong. We understand the Article 23 just passed at the National People's Congress. This, of course, is a very important legislation for Hong Kong's future. What is your personal take?
This piece of legislation should be effective. We will not leave any loopholes for the subversive elements to try and slip through. So it should be effective. And the fourth and the most important point is that it should be forward-looking. Crime can be committed in more ways than one now. So therefore, we need to be forward-looking so that it will be, in the foreseeable future, still be a good barrier for for any attempt to breach national security in Hong Kong. Therefore, national security is necessary for a stable community, for a safe community. With a safe community, we can now all join together as a team to fight for the common prosperity and the livelihoods of Hong Kong.
Both here on the mainland and in Hong Kong, there is a discussion about how to tip that very delicate balance between national security and development and growth. Now, of course, a lot of emphasis is being put on growth, especially when the economy is being challenged. What is your take?
Without security, there is no stability. Without stability, there is no development. So I think there's no doubt in my mind that security is most important. With security, there will be stability. And now that we have stability in Hong Kong, our focus will be on economic development, the prosperity of Hong Kong, and the resources to make the lives of people better.
Hong Kong has been regarded as a super connector between the mainland and the rest of the world, and that role has been served very well by Hong Kong. And now we see a world in change, fragmentations. China is also evolving. So do you think Hong Kong is still kind of holding up to that role?
I think so. We are the gateway for China, and we only have, although close to 8 million population, but we have a unique system. Because one country, two system, President Xi have emphasized there's no necessary to change. And thirdly, I think historically, Hong Kong has established as the world financial center. That is not something easily replaced.
Not something easily replaced. We do see, though, competitions, and that's not a new topic either. Singapore and some of the others. So where really is Hong Kong's advantage these days?
You know, recently there's a famous personality, Mr. Stephen Roche, to say that Hong Kong is gradually fading away. You know, Hong Kong is over as a financial center. During 1997, Hang Seng Index was at 15,000. And he now say today that Hong Kong Hang Seng Index, after 25 years, is still 15,000. I don't think there's a fair comparison because you're using the low point to low point. In between now and the last 25 years, Hong Kong index have went up to 25,000. So I think the competitiveness of Hong Kong is still there. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong is still one of the largest IPO in the world. And we raise also, I think, third largest bond market. You know, so our track record show that we still have a lot of financial muscle, you know, and we are still very competitive. Mm-hmm. And the index come down recently, he cited, I think it's not because of anything else, because the property market in Hong Kong, unfortunately, have come down 30%. So I think that have affected our stock market. Mm-hmm. And also interest rate worldwide is quite high.
West Kowloon Cultural District. I know you are working around the clock trying to figure out how to make this sustainable financially. Have you figured out a way?
Any cultural projects as such has to be financially sustainable. In most places around the world, it is always supported by government or a very rich organization, company in the back. So first of all, it is necessary. And secondly, our original plan is that government will give us one lump sum, an endowment, and that we will be able to build all the facilities. And that was in 2008. And all the assumptions were based on well before the Asia financial crisis, so therefore they are very unrealistic. Of course, government then did a midterm revision, but that was before any of the cultural facilities were opened. So now we have opened three facilities, four actually, and also we have operated them for several years. We welcome millions and millions of visitors. They are very, very much welcome and embraced by Hong Kong as well as the world. But at the same time, we realize those assumptions were wrong also. So now we have a much more realistic forecast, and we have presented it to the board of directors at West K and also to government, because three government officials sit on our board. So they are completely au fait of what's happening.
That's all we have for the last edition of our special program, Creativeness and Opportunities for the two sessions of the year 2024. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team, thanks for being with us. See you back here tomorrow.